Well, hello again all, and welcome to the teleclass, Using Social Marketing to Prevent Healthcare-Associated Infections, with Dr. Hugo Sachs. I'd like to acknowledge also Professor Syed Sattar, the co-founder of this teleclass series, and also Virax Technologies, Inc., the sponsor of this teleclass, and also a great supporter of teleclass education and infection prevention and control education as a whole. Thank you all. Now, if you've never met Dr. Sachs or have never heard him speak in person, put that high on your to-do list. He is a really interesting conference speaker, and he's popular. He's a popular speaker. He speaks at conferences around the globe. Dr. Sachs works at the University of Geneva Hospitals in Switzerland, and he lectures at the university as well. He's very closely associated with hand hygiene worldwide. In fact, I believe that the World Health Organization's 5 Moments for Hand Hygiene was, in fact, his idea. He has headed up the hand hygiene campaign in Switzerland. He's one of the leading experts worldwide in that field, and references to his work are really widely available. There's even a really good Hugo Sachs teleclass recording and handouts on hand hygiene that are in our recordings library. You can access that for free. What I didn't know until recently is that he also has expertise in other areas. For example, Dr. Sachs is an accomplished glider pilot. Also, and more to the point of why we are here today, is his research into using social networking tools to influence the behavior of people to prevent infections. It's really interesting stuff, and I am absolutely delighted that he's able to make the time to join us today. So to present the teleclass, Using Social Marketing to Prevent Healthcare-Associated Infections, from the University of Geneva, I am delighted to present my friend, Dr. Hugo Sachs. Hugo.
Thank you, Paul, for this very, very nice introduction. And I'm delighted to be in this telecast today and talk about social marketing, a field that I find really exciting. And I find it exciting to use marketing to prevent healthcare-associated infections. In fact, you could think that marketing, when you think of it only as selling products, is very far away from something serious like preventing infections. But I hope that I convince you in the next short hour or so about some really interesting insights that marketing can provide us to help us to understand better why certain things do not work as well as we think in infection prevention. So let's jump right in, and I would like to start with showing you and discussing three experiments that tell us something about human behavior. So next slide, number two. You can see here a picture of the University of Newcastle upon Tyne in the United Kingdom. And in this, this is the Department of Psychology that I'm talking about. They have a sort of a coffee corner there. They had that for years. And people are meant to put money into a little box when they pull themselves a coffee or a tea. Now, what the researchers did for this experiment, they put this note, slightly changed the note that was always there, showing the prices of the coffee, tea, milk, and so on. And you see a copy of this note on the right top corner of the slide. Now, what they did is they changed this note every week, and they changed it 1 week. They put a picture, as you see it on the slide, of two eyes, human eyes. And the other week, they put at the same spot and same size a picture of flowers. And they counted the money for milk, because people tend to have milk with coffee and with tea. and counted the milk that was used and counted the money that was put into the box to see how honest people are and you know how it works. Sometimes you forget to put the money or you don't have money with you. And so it was interesting to see if between the weeks with the eyes and the weeks with the flowers, there would be a difference in the ratio between money and milk. And I'll let you guess a little moment what they found before jumping to the next slide, as we do now. And you see on the left side the pictures they use of flowers and eyes, and you can see a graph showing at the bottom the amount of pounds money paid per liter of milk consumed, and you can see the weeks corresponding to the pictures that are shown at the side of the graph, and you immediately see that in the weeks with the eyes there was more money in the box per liter of milk than in the weeks with the flowers. And it was almost three times more money for the eyes weeks. So I think this is a very, very interesting study and interesting result, and it's interesting for us in infection control. You see that behavior is influenced by a little change in the environment. So this is an important message. And then apparently human face, human interaction, peer interaction is very important for human behavior. But one of almost the most important things in this is that I think that the subjects who put in the money were not aware why they were influenced in this week to put in the money. And so it shows that a little difference in the environment connected to making people believe that they are watched, but in an artificial way, makes a little difference in a little gesture, putting money in, that has a huge and accumulating effect that you can actually detect statistically of three times. So when we think of hand hygiene, for example, then this is a very close experience that might be helpful thinking about this. Now, let's go to the second experiment. The second experiment also involves eyes. And you see here a picture that they used of Kismet. Kismet is a robot that was developed at the MIT in Boston, actually, to interact with human beings, can draw faces and react to interaction with face. But the authors used this a picture of this robot in a game where people had the choice to put money. Either keep the money or contribute it to a common fund. And they played six rounds of this game, and one group had this Kismet on the screen. So people saw this face, this artificial face with the eyes, and the other group didn't have a face watching them while they decided to put the money in a common fund or keep it. And what they found out is that almost 30% more money was attributed to a common fund when people felt that they were watched by this Kismet. So again, there is a behavior change linked to influence of a little change linked to the feeling of being watched by human eyes. The third experiment is a bit different. So this is not about eyes. This is about cleanliness. And it's about cleanliness and the feeling of moral guilt, a kind of Shakespeare-Macbeth experiment. In this experiment that came from Toronto and Chicago, 30 participants were asked to recall an ethical an ethical deed, something they did that was very ethical, and 30 other participants were asked to remember something that was unethical, and they had to recall it and to tell it, and then they were asked to complete the words that you see on screen. And there are two letters missing, so they had to fill in these missing letters. And several possibilities are possible to complete these words. And so what they found was, here is in the next slide, you see examples. So the first word can be completed to spell wash or wish. And on the left side, you see all words that are linked to cleanliness, whereas on the right side, you see words that are not linked to concepts of cleanliness. And what they found was that people recalling an unethical deed they did in the past, they chose more frequently, statistically significantly more frequently, they completed the words to spell words from the left part that went into cleanliness, whereas people who recalled a story from their life that was ethical had less words that were linked to cleanliness. So this shows that something morally heavy can be washed away, or you can tend to go towards washing. And this is an interesting concept. The same authors also showed that it goes the other way, that people who wash their hands are feeling less guilty when exposed to something that might provoke guilt feeling. These three experiments show us very well that human behavior is not so rational and not so much under control than we think. So that was the introduction. We come back to that later on. I would now jump to healthcare-associated infection and show you some figures. So 1.4 million people are suffering from healthcare-associated infection in hospitals worldwide at any moment in time. This is an estimate. We don't actually have very precise figures. And 5 million people have annually accumulated infections, healthcare-associated infections in hospitals in Europe, and other estimates. And in these people infected in European hospitals, these episodes end fatally for 50,000 people. So this is a very this shows how important healthcare-associated infections are in the world, a knowledge that we have today, even if it's estimate. Regarding Switzerland, there are 75,000 people infected in Swiss hospitals, and that adds about $250 million to the Swiss healthcare system cost, and ends fatally for 2,000 patients each year. These are the facts. They are sometimes known by people, and I would like to show you now some results from the Swiss hand hygiene campaign that was done in 2005 and 2006. 116 hospitals participated, and before the intervention, before this campaign, 40,000 hand hygiene opportunities, moments where hand hygiene should have happened, were observed by trained and validated observers, and 40,000 when the intervention was already started. It was a multimodal intervention on the model of the model of Geneva. And you can see that the blue bars show the compliance in 2005, and the green bars show the compliance in 2006. And you can see the 5 moments for hand hygiene, before patient, before aseptic and clean, after body fluid, and after patient contact and after contact with patient surroundings. And there are three things that that come up in this graph. One is that there was quite a success by an increase to, of 25% of hand hygiene compliance before and after the campaign. But then you see also that the moments before touching a patient, before completing an aseptic or clean procedure, the, also after the campaign, the compliance was less than in the moments after touching the patient and after having had an exposure to body fluid or to the patient environment. This is a known fact. It's in almost every observation study you can see this, and I would not like now to discuss this, but it might be in a behavior sense, it might be something really interesting. And the third observation is that even after the campaign, there is quite some room for improvement, and most people experience that involved in hand hygiene, that they almost never get 200%, and certainly not in before touching a patient. Now, this is interesting. We did then a questionnaire study, at least at our hospital in Geneva, and distributed questionnaires asking about people about their, and this is the next slide, the slide that starts with survey among 1,030 healthcare workers about their beliefs regarding healthcare-associated infections and hand hygiene. And what was very astonishing is that a third of the respondents estimated that over 20% of patients suffer from healthcare-associated infections, and actually it, the true figure is rather around 10%, and that over 5% of these infections end deathly. So they had, they thought that this is really an important disease for patients, and that infection, the infected patients have to stay in the hospital for 20 days longer than if they would not be infected. Also, this is in the sense of more of the impact of healthcare-associated infections, a very high estimate by these healthcare workers. Over 70% of infections could be prevented by good hand hygiene. That's what they thought about the effectiveness of hand hygiene. And I don't know if you can jump back on the slide before, even if these are Swiss, these compliance data are Swiss data, in Geneva it would not be very different at that time as the green bars when the questionnaire was done. So jumping forward to the questionnaire slide again, it is astonishing that people do not use hand hygiene more when they have these beliefs and this knowledge about healthcare-associated infections being very frequent and being very having a high impact on patients. So the next slide. My conclusion is that knowledge about something doesn't translate necessarily in behavior. And going back to going to the next slide, going back to the study we did, I would show you some more results from these questionnaire studies, and I have to introduce the theory of planned behavior for this that we used in this questionnaire. So you see completely to the right the behavior. In this case, it would be the action to do hand hygiene on the moments when it's necessary. Then a determinant of doing it would be the intention to do it. And then there are three avenues, three groups of motivating factors in this model of behavior. And I would like to introduce this with the next slide, with simple phrases. So you have completely to the left, the demographics, age and gender. Then in the first group, you have a belief. What does it do? What does hand hygiene do? Does it help the patient? And now you remember that a lot of people said that it would reduce infections quite efficiently. And then comes an attitude, I think it's a good thing to do. The second group is what do other people think about me doing it or not doing it? That would be the belief, and the attitude would then be I should do it. And the third group of motivators would be how easy is it to do it? How much am I in control of this action? And the attitude would then be I can easily do it or I'm completely in control to do it or not. So this is this model we used in this questionnaire. And the next slide shows our results. So in the demographic determinants of good hand hygiene behavior that we measured by intention, so they had to declare how well they do hand hygiene. There was female gender, so women, being a woman, was a determinant of having a good hand hygiene behavior. Then to have had an exposure to a hand hygiene campaign and having had specific training in hand hygiene. What was also linked with a good hand hygiene was the peer pressure. What do others think about me doing hand hygiene well or not? And how easy is it? That was also very strongly linked to having good hand hygiene. What was completely fallen off the picture was the evaluation of having hand hygiene being efficient. And that was a very astonishing result. So it shows again that the knowledge about the outcome of doing hand hygiene or not doing hand hygiene does actually not have such a big impact on hand hygiene than the more psychological or soft factors, what do other people think about me doing it or not doing it? And here we think again back to the experiments with the eyes where somebody is looking what you're doing, if you're putting money into the box or not, or contributing money to a common fund. And then how easy is it? This is certainly also a very important point when you think about ergonomics in the hospital, so you make things easy for people. So these were the results from our questionnaire study that were really surprising. Jumping to the next slide, I would quickly run you through the stage model of human information processing. And it is a bit a complicated model that tells us how we human beings process information, and I would just point you out to some points in this model. One point is that human beings have limited resources of attention in any given moment, and then when you go to the bottom left side of the slide, that would be taking in information through your eyes or through your senses, and they go to a short-term memory store. And then there is this important act that comes into play of perception. So seeing something is not the same thing as perceiving something, because you can see that there are some flashes going down from the long-term memory to perception. Jumping to the next slide, here talking about this concept of perception. Long-term memory and experiences from the past have an influence on what we see and what we don't see. So this is another example how important it is and how we are influenced and how we process the reality around us by having it influenced by past experiences and our memory. So let's go to the next slide. Tasting study of two major sweet soda drinks. And this gives another way of looking at behavior coming from neuroscience. Here you can see that was an experiment where people were given sweet drinks, actually Coca-Cola and Pepsi, and then they had scanners, brain scanners, where the activated part of the brain was lighting up. And what is interesting in this experiment, in the result, was that when the tasting was done and the brand was not known, so they tasted the soda drink without knowing which one was which, there was another brain region activated for them, telling, I like this and I don't like the other one. As when they knew the brand and they tasted it and they had to score which one they liked and which one they disliked or which one they liked better, and they saw actually which one was Coca-Cola and which one was Pepsi, then there was another brain region apparently activated that helped them decide which of the two soda drinks they like better. And this suggests that we judge different with different senses, and Coca-Cola probably has a predefined concept in our head, and when we taste it, we don't actually only taste the drink and judge it, but the whole brand comes into play, and we use another brain region to do the work to judging if we like it or not. Now, jumping to the next slide, classical approaches to a certain good quality of care or to promote prevention and prevention of healthcare-associated infection is usually done by education and by policy. And when I say education, I mean typically PowerPoint presentations where we argue why we should do prevention, and mostly we present reasons, we present figures about the number of infections and the efficacy of effectiveness of doing preventive tasks to prevent these infections. And we implement policy so that a certain behavior would be prescribed and would then lead to a good quality. And having seen all the experiments and all the explanations that came so far in my talk, we can have a doubt if these two approaches to change behavior or to implement prevention of infections would be so efficient. So let's jump into marketing and do a sort of a 101 of marketing and see if we can use some of these tools for infection prevention. The next slide gives sort of the central fact why that marketing is based on reading people have needs they want to satisfy. And the needs can be more of physical nature, like to eat, sleep, etc., and social needs to be accepted, to be recognized, and individual needs to grow and to learn. And these needs, they can be satisfied by an exchange. Jumping to the next slide, you have a sort of a layout of the principle of marketing, or of the market situation. You see on the right side a consumer with his needs and wants, or her needs and wants. You see on the left side a producer of goods or services. This side of the marketing, the companies or the producers, they do research into marketing and into product design and manage the whole process. And then they come together and there is a good or a service or a consumer product that is exchanged between the producer and the consumer, and that's called the marketplace. That's the market. Next slide. A definition of marketing from the American Marketing Association is running like this. Marketing is the activity, set of institutions and processes for creating, communicating, delivering, and exchanging offerings that have value for the customers, clients, partners, and society at large. So here, this is a very broad definition and talks about marketing being an activity of communicating and delivering and exchanging offerings, not only products, but offerings that have a certain value for the customer. And that's why it is an exchange. The customer then gives money or something to the producer. And customers, clients, or even partners, because there is also a business-to-business exchange and marketing. And it goes further to the society at large, which would almost include social marketing, not only commercial marketing. Let's go to the next slide, marketing strategies. There are different strategies that we can think of when saying marketing, and this is enlarging a bit the concept of the definition of marketing, because usually people see marketing only as advertising of a product that already exists. So in the past, marketing was to produce a high amount of products that are of high value. Then marketing went rather towards selling an existing product and put a lot of energy in the selling activity. And then the actual marketing came into play and built a strategy around the customer's needs and wants. So it's not only about the product, but about the whole lifestyle of the consumer. And there is societal marketing, the marketing having a perspective that becomes larger and sees the benefits of society at large. And there is social marketing, marketing of non-commercial issues, mostly health-related. Next slide. Is marketing a science? That is a question that is open, but it is sure that marketing nowadays draws from several sciences like sociology, social science, mathematics, psychology, economics, neuroscience, anthropology, and so on. Next slide. Fundamental marketing principles. So there are these principles that are listed in a very interesting publication by Ma and colleagues called Social Marketing, a Behavior Change Technology for Infection Control in the American Journal for Infection Control in 2006 that I can recommend as a reading for this talk. What are the marketing principles? So there is an audience focus, and I think that's a very important thing and is one of the principal gains of looking at infection control from a point of view of marketing. Audience stands here would be in a commercial marketing world, the client or the consumer, and is the audience in the world of infection control, for example, or social marketing. And the audience could be for infection control departments or infection control teams. The audience could be the healthcare workers in the institution. So we could focus on them and see them as a clients, as our clients, and see what their wants and needs are, rather than coming to them with a predefined concept on what infection control is about. Then the second point comes with the first one, that is exchange of values. That is a very important principle when you carry over the concept of marketing, as we have seen, being an exchange between an offering from the from the producer of this offering to the client. And then there is an exchange of values, money against the service or money against the product. And thinking about infection control, this could be a very rewarding concept in my mind, that you not only ask the healthcare worker to do something you think he should do or she should do, but think of what is this, what could this bring as a value to this person. So I would like to jump to the next slide, actually, that I prepared to talk about this. You can see here a picture of an intensive care unit, very complicated, and somebody walking out. So you could think of this environment and see what would be rewarding for a healthcare worker working here, and putting yourself as a promoter of prevention of healthcare associated infection in his or her place, and think would be, for example, simple rules for hand hygiene be rewarding and really an exchange of value, in the sense of that the healthcare worker then gets rid of the insecurity of when really to do hand hygiene, and having a simple concept really bringing more certainty to do a good thing, because most healthcare workers want to do a good job. So this could be the way to think about exchange of values. Next slide illustrates this just symbolically, and we jump to the next slide. So going back to the layout I showed you before, having this picture of the exchange in the sense of a commercial market. And when we jump to the next slide, we see what I tried to explain, that we see the consumer on the right side has been exchanged against the healthcare worker, and you see the infection control team as being the producer or the offerer of services or tools. And the healthcare institution becomes the market, and what now is offered and exchanged is behavior, procedures, the environment, the healthcare environment. When you think back to the picture I showed you before of the intensive care unit, you can think of infection control teams offering the healthcare worker a more easy environment in the intensive care unit, for example, having hand hygiene distributors very conveniently conveniently laid out in the intensive care unit, so healthcare workers have an easy job getting the hand hygiene product instead of having to walk back and forth and dropping their work they were doing, and tools as well. So when conceiving an infection control program, you could think about it, what are really the needs and wants of healthcare workers, and then cut the whole system according to these needs and wants, and you probably get a much higher compliance than as if you would just propose them rules and tell them rules. A further principle is marketing research and design. This is the next slide, and slide 633 lists a definition of consumer research. The study of individuals, groups, or organizations, and the processes they use to select, secure, use, and dispose of products, services, experiences, or ideas to satisfy needs, and the impact that these processes have on the consumer and society. So one step, one principle that is important in marketing is the design into the market, into the people being in the market, the potential consumers or clients of your product. And often we jump this process when we introduce something new, a new behavior or a new rule in a hospital or in a healthcare institution, and we do not actually go onto the ground and ask people what their problem is how they live with the rules we impose on them. So this would be a market research. Jumping to the next slide, there are phases also that we sometimes forget when we do pre-marketing research, in the sense of we go on the ground and look what people want and what their problems are, and then we might do prototype testing, something that is really rewarding, that you bring one prototype into play, and this must not only be prototypes of tools and things, but can be prototypes of protocols or processes that you want people to work with. But something that is often forgotten is the post-marketing. So when you have introduced something, that you check back how it is working and what the barriers, facilitators, existing beliefs, wants and needs and competitors are that are there in the world of healthcare worker, or in another way to say it with the marketing terminology, in the marketing. An important thing, jumping to the next slide, is to see that marketing, in the sense, in the application of social marketing in our world of infection control, should be understood not only like the arrow shows from the product to the client, but also from the client to the product. So this is an exchange also in that sense, that marketing, understanding what the client, or in our world the healthcare worker, wants, has an influence on how we shape our processes, our rules, and our tools that we put into the healthcare system. Next slide, what are the research tools that we have to do this task, to do a market research? So there are questionnaires, there are quantitative observations, like hand hygiene observations according to the five moments. There are focus groups, quite well known, to find out what people know, what people want, by letting them discuss a subject. There are in-depth interviews, which are very rewarding, picking a few people, but then talking to them in depth and asking them what their problems are in their environment and in their job. And on the right side, there are think aloud protocols. This is very good when you let somebody do a task or give him a questionnaire or a tool and let him or her talk about it, and talk about it in the sense that every thought about this object or about this process while doing it is expressed in loud words to somebody following this person through the task or through the evaluation of the tool. Shadowing has the same, goes into the same direction, is walking behind somebody and seeing what he does or what she does. And there are qualitative observations also to find out about gaps or about difficulties in a job or by handling a tool. Next slide, you can then sort them out in more qualitative research tools and more quantitative research tools. And next slide, you can also sort them out for things that go more in depth and research processes that go more in breadth. Next slide, one word about simulation, prototyping, storyboards, and diaries. They are very rewarding to do simulation of processes when you cannot watch people while they do their actual job, because you can then not interrupt the job, like insertion of central vascular catheter, for example. You can still do a simulation, and mostly the problems show up there and make a better product for them. And I already mentioned prototyping as being very rewarding, and not only using this for tools, but also for processes. And storyboards is something funny when you give people pre-structured books, and they write in what they see during the day or over a week, and then you read them and you see what the problem can be. Next slide. So this is really about co-creating a process or a tool, and this is now used in marketing to get an optimal fit of the design of a product that is for somebody that wants to buy it or wants to use it. And this is quite, I would like to remind you of the beginning when I talked about the ICE experiment. People doing something, sometimes by doing it, they don't know why they do it. So it is good to have somebody looking at this process from outside. But people from outside designing something only in the office mostly get it wrong if they don't go on site and talk to the future users about it. So the good design for a good marketing nowadays does a co-creation, and that's a term that is used in marketing to do it together. Next slide. A very important principle is also the principle of marketing segmentation to find groups in your market. So all healthcare workers, for example, and see if there are groups that have a relationship to the product or the service or the rule you want to introduce, like, for example, hand hygiene or a certain way to isolate patients and use gloves or something. And you might find out that you have two different groups, so you can target your intervention more to these groups, as the marketers do. Next slide. So that was the segmentation point four and point five, the targeting then to these different segments in the market. The point six is interesting, that you do a competitive analysis. And nowadays, I think in the healthcare system, this is important because everybody wants now something of healthcare workers, and that you see if the behavior you want from people does not have a competitor with something else, or has a competitor in the sense that people want something to achieve something else, and they don't go along with what you want from them. Product positioning, I will talk later about this, and then there is the notion in marketing of the marketing mix. This is a set of things that you have to take into consideration as a mix to get it right when you do marketing. And this comes up in the next slide. Here you see the five P's of the marketing mix. This is just to remember it. There is the first P for product. So what is the product like? And it is really important to make it in a way that it is nice for people to use. For example, a hand rub that you introduce, or a hand gel or a foam. You want it to be effective, but you also want it to be in a way that people like it, that they like to take it into their hands, they like to open the bottle or action the distributor. So this is an important thing. And when you think back to the experiments I showed you in the beginning, this might not have an impact in a one-time observation of an action, of a use, but a little difference in attitude, even without the user noting it or seeing or perceiving it, might in the end over the day have a huge impact on the use of this product or of this procedure. Then the price, this is about the exchange. What does it cost to the healthcare worker to follow a certain procedure? What does it cost to do hand hygiene when the distributor is in the other end of the room or outside to do hand hygiene, to walk out and walk back? This is the notion about exchange. So you have to think about price of what you introduce, and this is really rewarding, I think. And then promotion. This is something very well known, that you promote your thing. And the place is an interesting thing, because people usually associate the product with where they meet it. So it is important where you talk to people about prevention of infections, that you get it right. And then people, the fifth P, who is involved in marketing the program product, who is involved in talking to people. You have to think about this. And you know that commercial companies associate people with a high profile to their product, and this usually works very well. I would like to jump the next slide and come to some examples to round up today's talk. So the next slide shows you the entry of a coffee shop. And you see here a very nice layout to get people for marketing of coffee, actually. And there is a slogan saying, take comfort in rituals. And here you can immediately see how these marketers have put themselves in the situation of the consumer wanting to have coffee. So they don't only sell coffee, but they sell something around it to be comfortable. And you see there are some autumn leaves, the weather gets colder. Then you see the lady reading a newspaper and holding a cup. And all of this gives you a feeling and of comfort, being inside, being in the warm. And then you are comforted by having rituals. This is very clever, because usually people are comforted by doing the same thing over and over. They can take a break and drink a coffee, and so they sell this product they market this in that way. And you could think about when you introduce hand hygiene, you could think in this way of hand hygiene. What does it really bring to the healthcare worker to have a good product and present hand hygiene in this way of comforting people, of doing the right thing, for example. Next slide. Ma also did a review, a literature review about marketing being used in hand hygiene promotion, called Social Marketing Analysis of 20 Years of Hand Hygiene Promotion. And you see on the left side some of the principles of marketing coming up that these authors used as a benchmark criteria to look at different studies. They found 53 hand hygiene promotion studies and looked of how many of these criteria were implemented, how many of these principles of marketing showed up in these studies. And you see that mostly 2 and 3 benchmarks showed up in these studies. Actually, in 20 studies there were 2, and in 20 studies there were 3. Let me tell you about a promotion strategy that we used at our hospital in Geneva. With the next slide, the promotion of Vigigem, we thought we will promote infection control under a new name. And when you jump to the next slide, you see the session with interdisciplinary people attending, and also teenagers that attended that have had nothing to do with the hospital, and they came together to create a name. So jump to the next slide. We had to produce very many ideas about this name. The next slide, showing people writing down different names. Here, next slide, you see a nurse explaining her proposal. And next slide, you see tons of proposals. Then next slide, you see two proposals, Beckman and Vigicherm. And the next slide, you see the results of voting for these different names. And you see that Vigicherm got the highest score and was not so much debated with the standard deviation of 1.8, whereas the name Bakhchouri was not so highly voted, but was very controversial, as you can see from the standard deviation. Next slide, new marketing ways. I really think that the commercial marketing is a very creative producers of new ideas, and I'm always looking to that to understand if there are new ways of promotion, new ways of interacting with consumers, or in our sense, in our world, healthcare workers. And I will show you some new ways of doing marketing that we could copy-paste and use in our world. Next slide. I recently got this email by an outdoors product producer or company saying, "We are excited that you are now a member of this company. You've joined a community of 3 million active members who share a love for the outdoors." So here the product is not in the center anymore, and they create a sort of a social network where people share experiences, and the product becomes part of it, but is not directly addressed by the marketing strategy. This is something that could be interesting, seeing that we have now these social networking tools like Facebook and so on. So we could use that in promoting prevention of healthcare-associated infection as well. The next is very, very creative. Guerrilla marketing is a whole movement, and you can see here a company that used existing symbols in the environment of houses to promote their product. And the next slide shows an advertisement of a dance video that we did to promote in a viral way hand hygiene over a video that is now handed over from person to person in the internet. And with that, I'm in the end of my talk, and thank you for your attention.
Dr. Sachs, thank you very much. I think that the dance video that you indicated there, I think I must have received in the last year or so, I'm sure I've received at least 100 emails from people around the world telling me about this new thing that I have to go and look at. So obviously, yeah, it's had quite an impact.
Yeah, we put it on our homepage, and I can see the hits on the homepage, and they are really impressive. And people all the time ask if they have to pay something, and we always say, no, it's free. It's in the open domain. We're happy when you mention where it came from, and actually don't sell it.
Mm. It was mentioned at the Australian conference a month or so ago, and also at two or three other conferences that I went to this year. So it's people are using it in their presentations. I want to ask you, in just a couple of minutes that we have left, you are a part of the organizing committee for the International Conference on Prevention and Infection Control in 2011. This is the first time this conference has ever been held. Do you want to give just a quick plug on what will happen there and where it is and why it is?
It will be a conference in Geneva in next spring. But I'm not in the position to give you more details. It will certainly be a very interesting event. And I already saw that many very interesting and proficient people were invited to give talks. And it's certainly an event that you have to consider on your agenda and to even come to Geneva to attend it.
Well, I certainly intend to. For the interest of anyone who wants to look it up, The website for that conference is www.icpic.eu, and that is taking place at the end of June in 2011, and the list of speakers is indeed very impressive. Thank you again to Virox Technologies for their support of this teleclass and of teleclass education. And Hugo, thank you again for another tremendous presentation you have given. I think this might be your third teleclass that you've done for us, and they're all very, very good. And thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for having me.
So until we meet again, everyone, have a grand day, and we'll talk again soon. Goodbye.